also, I want to try to keep the recordings going even during Ben Hazmanim. Obviously, Ben Hazmanim is a much more challenging time getting ready for Pesach. Not in yeshiva, so everything has to be taken care of. Maintenance, house maintenance, family, doctors, appointments. I'm just trying to keep some of the shiurim going. So I'm actually recording in the car home from a doctor's appointment. And I don't really have the guide in front of me, but I'll try to record a little bit about that pasuk. Again, we're just trying to discuss the four pasuk section of Rami Ovid Avi. It's a four pasuk synopsis of Yetzias Mitzrayim. These are the four pasukim that people recited when they brought Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash. They're recorded in Parshas Kisavo. It's probably the best synopsis in the entire Torah. The first pasuk talks about the descendant of Mitzrayim, Rami Ovid Avi, Vayered Mitzrayim. The second pasuk talks about the shibud, the enslavement, and the bondage, Vayereo, San HaMitzim, Vayanunu. Third pasuk talks about our tefillah, Vayetzak HaLashem, Vayishma HaShem, Miskalinu. And the third pasuk speaks about Gula, Vetzien HaShem, Lakinu Misham. Chazal, or the Medrash of this, that the Gada quotes, deconstructs each pasuk into small units and interprets each unit as referring to a different element or feature of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So we are now up to, in our analysis, that second pasuk that describes the enslavement. Vayareo osanu hamitzrim vayanunu. I discussed vayareo osanu, and now I started to discuss the word vayanunu, or they tortured us and they persecuted us. So the Agada quotes a pasuk in Shmos, which correlates to the word vayanunu. Vayasimu alav sarei misim, naman anaso besivlosam. Vayivin ari miskin osapara. I hope I'm getting the pasuk right. I'm obviously in the car. And in a previous shrim, I talked about the word laman anaso, the psychopathy of hatred. Talked about the slave labor being necessary, in particular of construction, and where when you subject human beings to construction without any machine or to do heavy lifting, you're essentially turning a human being into an animal just to carry heavy weights from location to location. I was an animal like that. I remember in the mid-80s, I spent the summer in a kibbutz. I had no place to go between Tisha B'Av and Rosh Chodesh Elul. So I went to a firm kibbutz, and I volunteered. And essentially, the person who was in charge of construction saw that I was a big, strong, hardy teenager. No longer so strong and hardy, but so he subjected me to heavy, heavy lifting. I was literally his mule all summer, carrying bags of cement and bags of stones and carrying buckets of water. In any event, I want to discuss in this very brief shiur, I hope it will be brief, the word sarei misim. Vayasimu alav sarei misim leman anasal b'sivlosam. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about ari miskin of leparo. So again, the word sarei misim doesn't appear in Kisavo, or doesn't appear in the Rami Avi section. It appears in the pasuk in Shmos, which Agada cites in its attempt to elaborate the concept of vayianunu. Vayasimu alav sarei misim leman anasal b'sivlosam. So it's an interesting phrase, sarei misim. And I want to discuss three different approaches. The simple approach, the approach of the Ramban, and the approach of Unkelus, and of course the word misim is fertile enough and elastic enough to encompass all three approaches. So the simple approach of sarei misim is that we were taxed. And it may seem like an ancillary or minor part. Well, what difference does it make if we were taxed? And what difference does it make? We were enslaved, we were murdered, we were thrown into the Nile, we were thrown into buildings, we were spat upon with. But everything that happened in Mitzrayim started a long legacy of exile, of galus. And throughout exile, Jews were always financially handicapped, financially vulnerable, primarily in three different ways, in three different fashions. One was the taxes were always doubled and multiplied, and Jews had to pay a special tax. And sometimes the taxes were camouflaged as an army tax, well, since you're not serving the army, and sometimes it was just an outright discriminatory tax against the Jews. The second level of financial handicap that Jews always faced was not just the taxes, that's the literal meaning of the word sarei misim, it's the word tax in Mitzrayim, and there's a reference to this at the very departure point of Galus. Echa yashva badahi erabasiyam haisa lamas. Now, lamas can be a metaphor that we were taxed and burdened in the way that a tax is a burden. And that's how Yaakov refers to Yisachar, but he lamas oveid. The donkey that Yaakov compares Yisachar to in Parshas Vayechi doesn't pay taxes. It's comparable to paying taxes where you carry a burden. But it could also mean actual taxes. Once we left our sovereign state, we were subjected to unfair taxation and unfair payments. My mic dropped a little bit, so if it comes out a little blurry, I apologize. But the second form of financial discrimination and financial terror was that Jews were involved, obviously, in the world of commerce and finance, especially in the late Middle Ages and the early Enlightenment period. Jews financed some of the great wars. As the economical system, the financial system, became more abstract, it wasn't based on goods and materials and gold and metals, but was based on credit and contracts and stocks and bonds, Jews had a natural inclination for abstraction. Jews had a natural inclination for larger economic systems. It's something which came natural to us. We were literate. We were mathematical. We had Talmudic experience. So Jews very quickly entered that field. And in some ways, it was reflective of the reality that Jews were always in danger of having their goods taken from them, their debts unilaterally canceled upon them. So as embedded as Jews became in local financial networks and systems, it was completely legal for Gentiles to unilaterally and arbitrarily cancel debts that were owed to them by Jews. And to a degree, that's what spurred us into trying to create what I would call offshore finances, where our finances weren't literally under our nose, in our house, in our safe, because they could be taken very easily, but were abstracted outside of the orbit of where we lived, and therefore were untouchable or unreachable. And the more complex the financial system becomes, the less you can target a particular financial resource or asset that belongs to a Jew, because it's locked up in stocks or in some bank or in some other credit somewhere. But even then, Jews were very financially vulnerable. And of course, the worst and most offensive and repugnant of them is when there were riots and when there was death and when there was attacks on the Jews. And of course, as we would say, all hell broke loose and everything was available. And there were no rules and no laws, and Jewish funds and assets and Jewish wealth could just be plundered by the mobs. And most recently in Nazi Germany, how much of our collective European wealth was lost to the Nazi Yimach Shemam plundering? It's hard to estimate, but a third, a half, who knows? So the fact that Egypt taxed us, and again, it was probably a preliminary tax just to start the process of discrimination. It's always like that. One thing leads to another, was a foreshadowing, was a forerunner of a very painful part of exile, which we don't often pay enough attention to because we're so riveted upon, as we should be, upon the loss of life and the physical torture and the violence. So that's the simple interpretation of Vayasimu Alav Sare Misim. The Ramban has a different approach. I don't have the Ramban in front of me, but it's Ramban in Shmos. He says that the Egyptians essentially didn't tax us just financially, but they taxed their children. Namely, there was a certain quota of Jewish children, presumably Jewish males, that were drafted or requisitioned into the army. And remember, for us, we think of course, most immediately of a Jewish army. Even if not of a Jewish army, let's say a person were to join the army of the United States of America today, it's an army where you're in touch with people, you have your needs attended to, and in particular, your religious needs are attended to, your kosher food and Yom Tovim and chaplains. But ancient armies, when you were drafted into an army, so first of all, I'm not a historian, so I don't know the death rates of armies, but you have to be looking at least a 30 to 40% chance that you would be killed. And even if not, I mean, you were taken, these wars were fought in faraway lands. It took months and months just to travel to these lands. And how many soldiers were killed just in transit? And there's no kosher food, there was no Jewish identity. And obviously, I'm referring primarily to the horrible, horrible experience of the Canton, under the Cantonist legislation, in which a certain amount of young, underage Jewish boys were forcibly requisitioned into the Russian army, primarily in the 19th century, and just the collective trauma that it caused the Jewish community and all the political infighting, because at a certain point it was a quota per community, so the community had to make decisions, and typically those decisions were not egalitarian, but those who were wealthy or those who were pedigreed were spared, and those who were marginal lived on the margins. They were forcibly taken, and I'm sure you know the history of the Cantonist laws and the history of the Chaperim of actual Jewish. It reminds me a little bit of Willy Wonka. Those who saw the original, I haven't seen the recent one, but the one I saw as a child, where there were people actually captured children, put them into caged buggies to transport them. And so the Ramban talks about the Egyptians actually requisitioning and drafting, and Yaakov was already a thing. And Yaakov was already concerned with this, and that's why when Yosef was certainly concerned. So I just have to adjust my microphone. And that's why when the brothers initially came to Mitzrayim, Yosef encouraged them to present themselves to Yaakov as shepherds, because if he realized their might and their power and their strength, he would have drafted the brothers into the army. And we read that section of Yigash too quickly. We don't realize the horror of joining the Egyptian army. And that horror, according to the Ramban, was actually implemented a few hundred years later. Probably about 100 years later. It's hard to know when these laws were implemented. The third facet of Sarei Misim is based on Unkelus's translation as Sarei Misim. Now, obviously, I don't have the Unkelus in front of me, but the general phrase is Shultin Mavishin. Shultin means lords, policemen, enforcers, but they were Mavishin. They were, as we would say, dregs, inferior people, uncouth people, vulgar people. Namely, they debased us by subjecting us to the authority and the enforcement and the punishment of terrible thugs, of drunken wretches, of horrible people. And you may think, what difference does it make if you're incarcerated, if you're persecuted, if you're tortured, what difference does it make? But at least if you're treated with class and you're treated with dignity, don't underestimate the importance of human dignity when everything else has been taken from you. You don't have freedom of movement. You don't have freedom to be with your family. But one thing you have is freedom to make choice, as Viktor Frankl wrote about famously in his essays, in his book about the Holocaust, and freedom to see yourself in a particular way that may be incongruent with your confined surroundings or your persecuted state. But when the people who are enforcing the law and persecuting you are themselves ugly, lower class, undignified, so you feel low about yourself and you feel that you have to answer to their authority, it makes it even worse. And when I'm saying this, I'm thinking most immediately about our experience in Nazi Germany and Nazi Europe, and are being subjected to Ukrainian guards, and I'm not commenting on the Ukraine of today, but certainly the Ukraine of that era, the Ukrainians were the lowest sector of society, the lowest class of society, and we of course still held collective trauma from the torture we suffered at the hands of the Ukrainians in the 17th century in the Khmelnytsky rebellion, which the Jews were terribly, terribly treated by the Ukrainians. And in general, that whole area, the White Pale settlement, the Ukrainians, the White Russians, the vicious, savage conduct towards their victims, and that conduct rose to the surface in the 18th century. And I'm thinking about the Pasuk in Eicha. I think it's in the second parak, I'm not sure. Maybe at the end of the first parak, if you have a Tanakh in front of you, I'm obviously focusing on my driving. That Hashem brought into our insides, our immediates, people of garbage, literally, ashpaso, dregs. And many Mefarshim interpret that not just to the Bavliim conquering us, because they at least were a semi-civilized culture, but to their henchmen, but to their mercenaries who are never going to be classy, civilized, dignified people, because they're guns for hire. That's what they do for a living. They kill, they rape. Remember, the Crusades was launched primarily in the wake of whatever wars had happened in the 11th century, And the mercenaries who had fought in all those wars returned to France. And France had a problem because there were all these drunk, murderous people ruining society. So the Crusades was a way to redirect them towards Jerusalem and redirect them towards the Muslims and redirect them towards the Jews. Right now in the news, there's a lot of controversy around South Africa in general and around their plans to indict and convict South African citizens who have served in the IDF. Now, it's all driven, of course, by anti-Semitism and hatred, but at least the cover story is there's actually a law in the South African books which was implemented and instituted in the wake of the fall of apartheid. So what happened was you had a lot of white officers who were forcibly removed from their positions in order to create greater equality in the army ranks, and a lot of them, because they were unemployed, they went to fight in the wars, the Bosnian-Serbian wars of the late 1990s, and then they returned to South Africa. And so in order to prevent people from becoming mercenaries, they created a law banning or outlawing South African citizens from serving in foreign armies. And anyway, getting back to the Sari Misim of the Targum Unculus, evidently the Egyptians, as part of their psychological terror, subjected us to the authority of, as the Unculus writes, Shulton Mavisha. Now, it's interesting to me to know how he interprets Sari Misim into Shulton Mavisha. According to the simple pshat, we pay tax. According to the Rambam, it was a person tax. We need X amount of soldiers per capita. According to the Targum Unculus, I remember seeing it once, so you don't have to say it in front of me, the word Sari Misim refers to the Sarim, not who collected tax or who recruited us to the army, but the lords or the taskmasters or the policemen who themselves were horrible, sub-dignified human beings who made our experience that much worse. So these are some ideas about Sari Misim. Again, the word Sari Misim enters the Haggadah because of the word Vayanunu. Vayanunu appears in Parshas Kisavo, trying to decode Vayanunu. The Haggadah quotes a parallel pasuk in Shmos, Vayasimu Alav Sarei Misim Laman Anosah.